the Pilot TV podcast this week, we're hitting the gym with Peacock on BBC Three, manning a space lighthouse in Beacon 23 on Paramount Plus, and witnessing one family's personal account of the Holocaust in We Were the Lucky Ones on Disney Plus. What's more, Matt Smith and Fabian Frankel join us on the show this week to talk House of the Dragon. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters. We are out of the studio today, in large part, as one of our number is off, but has heroically agreed to beam in just to see us. But he's here, the man, the myth, the legend, Bermondsey's favourite son, and a man who famously did have Sky TV growing up. It's Boyd Hilton. And Boydie, I should also, on behalf of myself and Kay, give you our congratulations. I did read in the newspaper that Bauer's board of directors have voted and agreed to greenlight your bonus package of $56 billion. So congratulations. Don't spend it all at once.
Bravo, James.
You twat.
Wow. And also with us, while not yet on holiday, a fact that we will not be able to say next week as she's titting off to Thailand, it's a woman who will never knowingly skip an episode of this podcast where we're reviewing a space-bound sci-fi series. It's Kay Ribeiro.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
You good?
I am very good. I'm very excited for my trip. So I'm yeah, cloud nine.
Yeah, so just to be clear, you're going to Thailand to get massaged, right? That's broadly speaking what's happening.
Crucially, Thai massage, right? So where else would you get it done? I'm not going
to
get it done.
It'd be a weird
sorry.
Place to go for like a Yorkshire massage. I'm going to Thailand for. Okay, good. It'd be nice.
I was going to say
bring back some wellness.
Yeah, I was going to say I'll be thinking of you both at the same time, but obviously that's weird, so I won't be. But
it would be weird.
Yeah, I won't, but I'll be thinking about you when I'm away because I'll be obviously missing you terribly.
I mean, you won't be missing us that much because I'm absolutely going to make you call in from Thailand to review something. So.
Well, do you know what? If it wasn't for the bear week, I would tell you to do one. But yeah, can't miss the
bear. It's true. We are hoping to review the bear next week. We are not clear when the screeners are going to arrive. It is almost certainly going to be YK is in Thailand. So there may have to be a live beam-in bear review from Thailand. So yeah, good stuff.
We're talking about the show The Bear, by the way. Not actual bears.
Not actual UK bears.
Not bears.
I don't think we can insult the listeners' intelligence. They're listening to a TV podcast. If they thought I was just reviewing animals now, we'd be in trouble.
Yeah, that would be strange. This is a particularly nice panda. No, it's good. It's a shame that we're reviewing The Bear, actually, when you're in Thailand and not, for example, Bridgerton, because obviously that would be appropriate if you were reviewing it from Bangkok.
Oh, James, no. Come on, no. I was going to say it's beneath you, but it's not. Come on.
It's absolutely not. It's absolutely not.
At least
not.
He hasn't yet started talking about bumholes, which is the main subject.
That is true.
The main subject for listeners. Of the Pilot Plus this week, in case you're not a subscriber.
Do you know what? I've just remembered something. One of the funniest things he said a while ago, which a listener flagged, and I've just realised it's got the commonality of bums, is when he was banging on about bumlurgy.
Bumlurgy, yes, that's true. I remember the bumlurgy conversation. The bumhole conversation, to be absolutely clear, was not just me being obscene. It was directly in relation to the most recent series, the fourth series of Prime Video's The Boys, which has, frankly, a lot of, shall we say, bumhole appearance, in particular in the first episode. And this segues quite nicely to what we've been watching this week. And I have been watching The Boys, specifically every single episode of this new season of The Boys. I've seen all 8 episodes of season 4. As I mentioned on Pilot Plus, and I am loving it to bits. I have loved it. I do love it. I think it's absolutely glorious, even if Boydie doesn't fully appreciate it for its, you know,
majesty. I see, though, that the creator of the show, what's his name?
Eric Kripke.
Eric Kripke took my advice and has said that the next season will be the last. He knows that has to bow
he
out.
He has.
Yeah. He was clearly listening to Pilot Plus. He knows it's going on too long. He's slightly running out of ideas. It's become a bit repetitious. So he thought, right, yeah, they're right. We'll do one more season and that'll be it. Fair enough. So that's given me a new impetus to carry on watching it.
I love The Boys, but I also think you're right. I think ending 5 seasons is a good move because while I'm not bored of it in any way, I do think it is rapidly running out of runway. You know, it's got to the point where it's like you cannot keep this up forever. Like you have to come to a conclusion.
You can't explode people's heads consistently week in, week out for more than 5 seasons and 40.
You can't explode their heads or indeed their bumholes consistently in every episode of a show for 5 seasons. So yeah, so you're right. We need to bring this bad boy home. So yes, that's what I've been watching this week. The other thing I watched this week is I watched the finale of The Veil. Now, anyone who's also watched The Veil knows exactly what I'm talking about here. So that show was kind of sort of low-level batshit all the way through, not just because of the accent. Let me tell you, the final episode of The Veil is deranged. Like, absolutely deranged. Like, no matter how you think that show is going to end, you are not prepared for where it ultimately goes. It is completely. I mean, it's not completely and absolutely like Banana Crackers in that, like, they fall down a hole in the ground that takes them back through time. Like, it's not, it doesn't go full out of range. But
one of the main characters isn't a robot or an alien.
No, that's true. One of the main characters isn't a robot or an alien. And it is, but within the bounds of its non-sci-fi, non-fantasy world, it is about as batshit as Stephen Knight could make it.
And you're saying that.
Yeah.
You've inspired. I renew my theory that he's basically writing largely as a dare most of the time.
You've inspired me to carry on watching it. I love a Stephen Knight bit of wacky, wacky twisting. You see what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of these things where if someone said, "Oh, great, would you recommend The Veil?" I'd be forced to say, "No, not exactly," but I quite enjoyed it.
Oh, I can't wait! I must find time in my hectic schedule. The problem now is, frankly, because what I've been watching is just to take up the baton. Politics is like coverage of the election. I'm obsessed with it, even though it's actually quite boring. A lot of it,
yes,
and repetitious. Yeah, but you know,
Boyd. No, listen. I also have wanted to keep, you know, I wanted to keep abreast of everything. But I'm sorry, watching these debates where they're just screeching over each other at the end of a hard week, I'm like, I can't.
The end of a hard week.
It is. Yeah. You get through the week, and then you just see about five people shouting at each other.
Just out of curiosity, like, what are you watching it for?
Why?
No, because, well, and I mean this with the best one in the world, because obviously, as you get to this point in the in the election cycle, everyone's talking, we're going back to bumholes again, everyone's just talking out of their asses, like, because they're just saying absolutely anything they can think of to get people to vote for them, regardless of how connected to reality it is. And also, both of you, I'm pretty certain, know exactly who you're voting for.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure what the goal is.
I know what you mean. I am voting for Nigel Farage, obviously, but...
Your GB News co-host.
Yeah.
I'm Boyd's token friend.
Also, James will be hating this, by the way, listeners, because he hates it when we touch on politics, because he thinks we're going to alienate.
Yeah, we're not allowed.
So I'm not going to.
As long as we're bipartisan, as long as we're fair and even-handed.
Let me preface what I'm about to say. I'm not going to come down on any political. I'm not going to lecture anyone on politics, but. But I watch it more genuinely, and this is going to sound wanky, but from a TV critic point of view, like, I'm fascinated by the TV coverage of these things.
I see.
So, you know, I've watched all of these debates. And the interesting thing is the best one by far, right, the best show that I've seen out of all of them so far was the one Sky did in the week with the two leaders, with Beth Rigby, who is brilliant. So Beth Rigby interviewed them individually, separately, quite in depth, and very, very challengingly, if that's a word, and then she threw it open to the audience. And this is the famous one where one guy in the audience asked Keir Starmer why he was so robotic, and Keir Starmer did not have an answer. And that was a massively, I thought that was one of the most revealing moments of the whole thing, because he has, because again, I'm not, I mean, I obviously, whoever I vote for, Keir Starmer is quite robotic in some ways, even though he's been on my Oscar podcast. He's very good talking about football. Yeah, you know, I must have told you that.
No.
Yeah.
God, you gave me every single detail of the New York hotel. You haven't told me.
Keir Starmer was on our Arsenal podcast last year. Yeah.
Wow.
And he's very good talking about Arsenal. He's more relaxed talking about Arsenal football than he is talking about politics, frankly. So this guy accused him of being robotic, and the amazing thing was he didn't have an answer. So his kind of response was quite robotic. You know, he didn't go, you know, he could have made a joke about it, but he couldn't find it within himself in that moment on live TV to find a way of answering that point. So that was quite embarrassing, I thought, for him. And then of course Rishi Sunak, just looking like he'd rather be anywhere else in the world apart from being interviewed by Beth Rigby live on TV. So it's like, as TV events, I find them fascinating. And then the final debate, which is on BBC One week after next, in right kind of about half a week before the actual election. I mean, that'll be fascinating because it is interesting when they shout over each other and the poor person has to try and deal with that. I mean, when in the first debate, literally, Rishi Sunak shouted about the alleged two grand figure that Labour has to pay in tax. He just kept shouting it, yelling it. It was insane. And again, Keir Starmer didn't answer him for about the first 3/4 of an hour, and then suddenly realised he had to fight back. So all these things are fascinating. But I'm giving my awards to my TV TV host of Politics Shows Awards to Beth Rigby, the aforementioned, and also Michelle Hussein, who's the BBC's one of the BBC's best political correspondents. She's on the Today programme. She does brilliant interviews on the Today programme in the morning with them, and she just doesn't let them talk any bullshit. She's brilliant, and she's doing the one coming up on with the fight with the two leaders against each other, head to head, and I think she will do a good job of keeping them online and not letting them show over each other. Hopefully, I'm saying that, but it hasn't happened yet. So yeah, that's my mostly viewing. The other thing I've been watching.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Get
ready to drop it.
No. I was like, I can't believe he's taken him this long to mention that he hosted the finale of Inside Number 9.
Come on.
Oh my God, I can't believe it.
No, let's talk about it. We're excited. Tell us about it. I've seen a lot of stuff on Twitter. A lot of people posting pictures of
James. Look at James's smug face.
I mean, I've never seen James look so happy. Yeah. I mean, he can't stop laughing.
No, he literally can't stop laughing. It's like if James had been hosting an evening, the finale of, I don't know, The Expanse.
Take your pick.
Yeah. The Expanse finale. It was very exciting. I did indeed host the final celebration of Inside Number 9. Yeah. Someone asked, didn't they, Kay, at one point, for my top 9, and we never go around to keep telling my top 9 episodes.
Right?
Yeah.
As you just heard, I defended you when James was taking the piss out of you getting excited about doing this. Yeah, I stood up for you then. And what you've done is you've ruined my moment because that was going to be the reader's question. The listener's question, sorry.
Oh, okay, fine. Yeah.
Oh, well, we'll get to it then.
Yeah, we'll get to
it
then.
Yeah. It's coming up.
Excellent. There we go. I won't bore you with any more details.
But specifically the finale did it live up to your expectations?
Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Just a fantastic celebration of the show. Yeah. It reminded me of the finale of Curb, which I mentioned to Reese and Steve. And Reese was like, yeah, it is a bit similar. Yeah, because bringing about lots of characters. From the lots of actors, particularly from the show, 55 actors.
Wow!
That been in previous episodes appeared in the
should have been 99, surely.
Yeah, indeed. appeared in it, so it was absolutely brilliant. Yeah, I loved it.
Kay, what have you hosted this week?
I haven't hosted anything, right? But I've had a very emotional TV viewing week because, first of all, I finished off Lost Boys and Fairies. Have either of you finished it now?
No.
Boyd?
I've watched the third episode yet, no.
Oh my God. It is devastatingly good. It's so, so emotional, heartbreaking, joyful. All you go through a gamut of emotions. And I was talking to a good friend of ours yesterday, actually, who's been in a similar situation. He's adopted. And he was just saying what an accurate portrayal of the adoption process it is. And I think we talked about it last week. Boyd, I think you flagged Leo Harris, who plays Jake, just being extraordinary for his age.
Kid.
And like, yeah, the kid. Such a powerful performance and a great ensemble cast. So of particular note to me, other than Elizabeth Berrington, who played the social worker, I just wanted to give a little shout out to Gwyneth Keyworth, who appears in the third episode and she plays Jake's biological mum. And I have to say, like, I mean, there's so many emotional moments during this whole thing. It's like a roller coaster, but the scenes with her particularly, I found so deeply moving. So yeah, I had a massive, ugly cry at that, enjoyed it immensely. And then as if that wasn't enough, like I hadn't cried enough. I caught up with the piano finale. Now, I don't think either of you, I don't know, Boyd, are you watching it?
No.
Okay. James, I know you won't have done.
This is the one where people randomly go up to a piano in a station and play it, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And it was the finale. So all the people who had been selected from across the country were giving, who were chosen, they were gave a performance. And then one person was commended for the best performance of the night. It wasn't a winner, but it was like the most notable performance. But it was just so emotional because they all gave fantastic performances. But I don't know, it's just one of those shows, a bit like Race Across the World, where it transcends like a reality, you know, like, It's just about so many more things than you think originally. So it's like, it's the emotion of, you know, how they came to the piano. It's the beauty of them playing the pieces. It's the joy that they give to the audiences, etc. But of particular note to me was there were two moments. One was a woman called Fran, the wife of Duncan, who sat by him for his final performance because Duncan's got dementia. And they were really concerned that he would, you know, under the pressure and everything, he would just forget, you know, how to play his piece. And so he asked that she could sit next to him. And it was just so touching to like witness that love, that pure love. And he played this song that he's written for her. It's Fran's theme, which I, by the way, I couldn't get on my head. And then the other moment was when Brad gave his speech at the end and he dedicated his performance to his foster parents and sort of like gave this very inspiring, heartfelt speech to all the care kids in the UK. It was just honestly so moving, and the music was extraordinary. I loved it. So, yeah, they're the two things I wept through.
Lovely. Do you play the piano, Kay?
No, I don't.
Why are you laughing? He might do.
Are you a secret piano player? Is this what we're saying? Like,
no,
secretly,
I was preempting him doing some kind of joke.
Oh. No, I have no terrible joke based on piano.
Okay,
no, sorry, I've got nothing.
No, I don't. I used to play the recorder back in the day. And also, I am quite partial to the triangle. But no, I don't play the piano.
Well, obviously, as you well know, I am an axe man of some renown. And,
oh, my God. James, I've never experienced you playing the guitar, but I've heard a lot about it.
Rumour has it that Channel 4 are interested in a spin-off of the piano called The Guitar.
It's just called The Axe.
The Guitar, with James as one of the judges. Like, James could be the new, what's his name? You know, what's his?
Lang Lang.
Lang Lang, yeah. James.
Yeah. It could happen. Now, I have actually, this is absolutely true, I have recently picked up my guitar once again. So I'm trying now to start learning again.
James, yeah. I absolutely insist that on one of the Pilot Plus episodes, for a bonus for the listeners who pay, that you do some kind of, you know, either a little theme tune or a composition dedicated to the podcast, whatever you want. Come on.
I feel like because they pay money, they should be exempt. Like, it should be everyone who doesn't pay is forced to listen to it, and those who pay don't have to. But what I will try and do at some point, this is not going to be a short term thing. It's going to take a while because, like, I'm trying to get back into it. I've downloaded a little app called Simply Guitar to help me play. I've been meaning at some point to properly learn Toss a Coin to Your Witcher, so maybe I'll learn that.
Well,
I'll play it on the podcast.
It's what the world's been waiting for. Yeah.
It is. It
Please
is.
Note
what
that
the
not a lot
are crying
of arm
out for.
Twisting was required there.
No. Yeah, that was brilliant. Yeah, all right then, yeah.
It'll
be good.
We'll see what happens. Okay, now let's move on to the listener question. What could it be? What could the question possibly be, Kay?
Right, well, he spoiled it for all of us, but as Boyd said, it is an inside number 9 question. So Lucy, well, actually I wanted to do it 2 parts. So Lucy said, I don't think James will be able to answer this one, but what are your favourite Inside Number 9 episodes? Also, I think the final series could be a contender for some spoiler specials. Obviously, that moment's gone now, Lucy, and as you know, they're very reluctant to do the shows that you want us to hear doing the spoiler specials. I refer to, what was it? Proven Innocent. But Gaz did ask if Boyd, in particular, as the number one Inside Number 9 fan, if he could list his top 9 episodes.
What did you call the Harrison Ford show?
Isn't it Proven Innocent?
Presumed Innocent.
Well, I mean, that would be a spoiler if that's how it indeed ends. But no, it's Presumed Innocent.
That really made me,
I mean,
yeah, that's really
oh,
funny.
No. Well,
that's good. I like that you just skipped to the end. That's good.
Yeah, keep that in.
Oh my God, definitely. Yeah, keep
it in. Yeah. So one of my favourite episodes, this is a very me-centred, because James obviously doesn't watch it.
I don't. But I will be judging your choices based on having not seen any of them.
Okay. All right, I'll quickly run through the best episodes.
We should have some kind of countdown mechanic to like put you under pressure.
Yes. Yeah.
Dun, 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 in dun, 9 dun. Seconds, can you give us your top 9? No. Go on.
90
hit
seconds.
Us with it. At
I'm
number 90 9,
seconds.
Boydie.
I'll try and do it in 90 seconds.
All right, I'm getting my stopwatch.
All right.
Okay. Go.
Give him 99. You can have 99 seconds.
Thanks. First of all, A Quiet Night In, which is the second episode ever that went out. It was the one, it's totally silent, apart from right at the end where someone says something deliberately. And it's the robbers trying to rob this lavish house. And it's got like twists and turns and everything. But it's brilliant. But to do a kind of totally silent episode, second one in, was fantastically bold and brave and daring. Then series 2, The 12 Days of Christine, which was the one that starred Sheridan Smith in one of her greatest ever performances, and absolutely superb. It was the most dramatic one so far. It's quite funny for the first 5-10 minutes. Then pretty much it's just a solid drama with this amazing explanation of what's going on at the end. I don't know why I'm saying I won't spoil it, but I guess there are people who haven't seen it yet, so I won't spoil
it. Boyd, we have had a complaint about spoilers, but
I know.
Tread carefully.
Yeah. Then season 3, The Devil of Christmas, which was one of the Christmas specials. They've done a few Christmas specials. This was the one that was shot using cameras that actually made shows in the 70s and 80s, which inspired this episode and inspired a lot of Inside Number 9, these big, huge cameras that filmed shows like Thriller and Beasts back in the day and Tales of the Unexpected. And it's a brilliantly sick and twisted episode. It's got a DVD, like director's commentary over the top by Derek Jacobi, and it's got one of the most gruesome endings in all of history.
Oh, wow.
Zanzibar, which I think was the opener of series 4, is the one which is not only a farce set in a hotel with lots of hotel rooms, in the corridor of a hotel with lots of people coming in and out and sleeping with each other and being found out. The whole thing is written in Shakespearean iambic pentameters.
I've seen that one. Yeah.
Yes, incredible. Deadline is the one-off Halloween live special that was absolutely not only was it a brilliant coup and they fooled half the viewers watching, and people actually tuned off thinking that it had been a technical fault and that it had all gone horribly wrong. Whereas, in fact, it was a fake technical fault. And the actual episode itself is extraordinary as well. It's like properly scary, funny, etc.
What number are we on?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's 6. This is 6.
I think you've got to add in the numbers for a bit of drama, Boyd. Come on.
6. I don't know how long I've got to go, by the way. 6 is Death Be Not Proud, which is the Psychoville crossover. So Psychoville was the series that Reese and Steve made before Inside Number 9, and they brought in characters from Psychoville, and this is one of the brilliantly sick and twisted episodes of all time, including the bit where the mother shakes the guy's penis when he's just had them for
God.
A week. Yeah, exactly. just as a warning. Then there's 3x3, which was the season 8 surprise episode, another coup where they pretended that they'd made a whole episode which was like a kind of on the buses style sitcom, but in fact that was just a ruse to hide the fact that they'd done a faux game show hosted by Lee Mack, which has an incredible ending, and that's a prop that was filmed exactly as game shows are filmed these days, on a virtual set with Lee Mack hosting. Then finally, penultimately from the most recent series, Mulberry Close is the one that was filmed from the door cam entirely, and it was like a farce and a black comedy, and it was also a take on true crime stories. It had a whole Netflix spoof thing at the end as well. That was absolutely brilliant. And finally, the final episode, I had to drop one of my top 9, which was the one about the number 13 with Amanda Abington, which was a big farce that Dermot O'Leary's in. That's one of my favourites, but I had to drop that one in favour of plodding on the very last episode, which is the one that aired on Wednesday that I hosted the Q&A for, and is one of the most wonderful, enjoyable finales of a TV show ever.
Wow. I mean, you definitely blew through the clock there, but
listen, yeah, it was a good list. You've got a couple of failings. Number one, you just forgot to do the numbering system halfway through.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. And also you took 3 minutes, 39 seconds, but it was a fantastic list.
To be fair, you didn't show me the clock, so you kind of put the clock down.
Boyd, I didn't want to like stem your flow. I just wanted you to...
No, never stem the flow.
This has been a weirdly biological episode of the podcast so far. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with it.
Well, you're not comfortable with it.
You started off with a lot of bum hole chat, then Boyd talked about shaking penises. I mean,
that's true.
Oh, by the way, you do see Robin Asquith's bum in the finale in Plodding On. Yeah, so there's the theme here. Yeah.
Enough with the bum chat already.
Yeah, sorry.
Right. Well, that was our listener question. If you would like your question answered, do send them into @KRibeiro on Twitter, or feel free to send them to us @PilotTVPod on Twitter or Instagram. Time now for this week's guests, I think. Now, of course, you will know that House of the Dragon is back on our screen, specifically on Sky and Now, and we are all the better for it. So we took this opportunity to talk to two of the stars of the show, Maverick Dragon Rider and all-round bad boy, Daemon Targaryen, aka Matt Smith, plus the ludicrously handsome Lord Commander of the Kingsguard and legendary swordsman, in every sense of the word, Sir Criston Cole, aka Fabian Frankel. And we sent our very own sworn sword, Sir Boyd of Hilton, to talk to them about the new series, which slaps, by the way.
Welcome, Matt and Fabian, to the Pilot TV podcast.
Thank you, Boyd.
How's it going? How's Junket Life?
Junket Life's been... We've had a lovely... I have to say, Matt and I have had a real laugh.
It's been all right, actually.
It's been all right,
we've
man.
Been together. I've had nice partners. I've had you, I've had Liv, I've had Tom. I've had quite an easy run of it.
Yeah, it's been absolutely fun.
Yeah.
But you obviously match your favourite partner.
Well, I've got, come on. My favourite partner in life and in art.
That's it. I should hope so.
Now, I have to start with the fact that Fabian, when we see, the first we see of Kristen in this new season, he's involved in a scene of intimacy.
Yes.
How do you, is that fun kind of scene? When you read the script and you go, oh yeah, I've got to do that. Yeah. And that's how they welcome me back to the new season. Do you feel trepidatious or do you go, yeah, this is going to be fun?
I mean, we sort of knew, they told us a little bit that was where it was going at the end of last season. And actually, Liv and I had sort of played the sort of in the romance of it in the end of season one, but I think they ended up taking that out in the edit because they wanted it to feel like a big revelation in season two. But you just read it like you read anything else. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a scene that you're going to have to do, and thankfully Liv and I get on very well. And so it was, you know, we had a laugh. Yeah, we had a real laugh doing all those scenes.
Is it easier to do those scenes than scenes of, like, action and, you know, when you're in close combat?
I mean,
or something?
It's not. I wouldn't say it's easier, but they're just... Listen, if you get on well with anyone, any scene is fine to do. Do you know what I mean? I can't imagine doing a sort of scene of any nature and have a scene partner that I didn't get along with. That I think that probably is a lot more stressful than doing any scene with someone you like. Do you know what I mean?
100%.
Yeah, and Matt Damon's had his fair share of intimate moments so far. How did we find him in as season two begins?
In grief, actually.
Yeah,
I think ultimately, and sort of bubbling vengeance, quite reactionary, you know. And then that sort of tumbles him into a sort of strange, self-reflective, mythical abyss.
Yes, we get. Yes, I'm not even allowed to talk about the first episodes.
How many have you seen?
I've seen four.
Okay,
how is four?
It's fantastic.
What happens in?
I'm not allowed to say. We're not allowed to discuss three and four officially. So I'll get told off if we do. But they are. It's spectacular.
It looks good. I've not seen it. Four's in the. Yeah. No, that's the. Yeah, that's that.
It's all of that stuff, isn't
but
it?
It's not so much that, but yes.
And with Tom and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it read good. It looks good.
Yeah, it looks incredible. Yeah.
Why didn't you ask for it?
And I've got it. I'm gonna wait.
You've got it in your inbox.
Yeah, I've got all four.
I haven't.
Oh, is it right? It's a rival. You should have all four, surely, in your
inbox.
But I wasn't going to ask. I must ask about one actor who isn't in one and two, but I know you have scenes with, which is Simon Ross. Oh my God!
Because I haven't seen those yet, but I just
is he amazing.
He
is
incredible. I knew he's on the day. I knew on
you
the
knew,
day.
We knew at the read-through.
He was nicking every scene.
As soon as we did the read-through, I thought Matt's out of a job. Here.
Yeah, I know. I've just been absolutely upended. I mean, I loved him.
Yeah.
He's so, and also he brings a lightness of touch to it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And there's an inherent comedy to him as an actor that you can't really teach.
You can't teach.
And this show sort of is in need of.
And
I think what was lacking last year was that. I felt that it needs characters like that to bring a levity to.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Freddie Fox does the exact same thing, I think, in his own way.
Yeah, Freddie's
in
brilliant.
A sort of slightly more kind of sardonic that, way, but.
Simon's in the show came out called Doug's Council. Do you know about that?
Yes, with Karen.
Yeah,
he's Stephen Moffat.
Yeah,
yeah. Apparently, that's really good.
It's fantastic.
I can't wait to see that. Actually, yeah, and funny, right?
It's hilariously
and
funny.
Karen, I love her as well, you know. But I am, Simon. Weirdly, what I found quite, you know, what was happening to me as Damon, so to speak, was I found myself for the first time liking another character on his behalf.
Yes.
It's very rare. Apart from his brother and Rhaenyra, he sort of can't really bear in most people.
He doesn't like people.
There was something about Simon that got under his skin that he liked.
It's a good point, isn't it? Because Damon is flying solo a lot of the time, isn't
always.
He? He kind of completely rejects all negotiation and he has his own way of doing things. That must be great fun to do.
Yeah, it is. Until, you know, he starts to unravel around Simon and Simon sort of gets in his ear strong. I mean, I don't know if it's just because I love Simon Russell Beale so much. I can never work it out.
Yeah.
Well, but I'm pleased about that though, because I've been excited to see his work.
Of course, the two of you had in season one had a fantastic kind of relationship. I remember when you called him Crispin moment. And that establishes from the start there's a lack of respect from you two.
Yeah.
How did does that continue? But is there any room for that in season two?
Well, we wish there was.
It's been parked a bit, hasn't it? It feels like there needs to be some resolution to that.
Yeah, we hope so. I hope that they do that in season three. that there's a resolve between...
At least we see each other. Same with Otto. I feel like I've got to see Otto.
I didn't even see you once this season.
No.
We didn't shoot one single day together.
We didn't see one single day in 8 months.
I mean, we saw each other out of work, but I mean...
Do you see each other when you're not necessarily together in scenes?
Yeah. We talk. I speak to Matt all the time.
Yeah. We'll arrange to go for a pint or whatever.
Pint and have dinner. We like to have a mooch around.
Yeah, we try and keep, you know, but we were all very much in our own worlds this year, which is why I felt very fortunate to have Simon.
Yes.
Because he's such great company.
Because I think you two could have a good spin-off show together.
We'd like that. Someone else said that today.
Really?
Well, yeah.
Hey, was I in the room for that?
On ITV.
Richard.
Richard.
Oh, Richard Madeley.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe I might have asked the same question as Richard Madeley.
No, you didn't.
You guys made
the same point, which is
Richard Arnold.
Of course.
Although the idea of Richard Madeley asking questions about House of the Dragon feels very entertaining.
It could happen, mate. Good Morning Britain.
Yeah. He's just written a novel, isn't he?
He has just written.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yeah, you're going to write
it. No, my fuck.
No. It would do very well.
No,
I'm sure.
Chance. I would get past the first page.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, but if I do, you'll be the first to know.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks. You've been involved in this in a huge fantasy show before. Mm. Is this much different as a you know, kind of all the premieres and all the stuff surrounding it and the junkets and all that? Is it very different doing this show from that?
Yeah, I think this show is different to pretty much any other show I've been in, purely in scale. You know, the premieres are like, they're like big movie premieres, to be honest with you. And there's a global sort of reach to this show, which is unique to it.
Do you get kind of, when you get recognized on the street in general, how often is it because of this show versus House of Dragon versus Doctor Who versus The Crown? Is there a sort of, or is it like an even split?
Rank them.
I'm quite intrigued. Yeah. No, not so much rank, but I'm just intrigued as to whether your experience from House of the Dragon has changed in that way or not.
Yeah,
I keep getting asked that.
Definitely, I think it has. Yeah, like yours has. And I mean, look, it's like anything, isn't it? I think when a show's on the telly, it becomes that part of your life becomes
the sort of thing that,
more present. And then when it's not, it's a bit more relaxed.
Is it more Doctor Who when it's not?
I don't know, really. Mix. It's hard to say. It's just, it can be a bit of both, really. You know, and it's interesting because it usually is one or the other.
People Dragons or like, Doctor Who?
Oh, yeah, whatever. It could be anything, couldn't it? It's like the same view. People might go, I love that thing you're in called The Serpent. You know, there's that person who's, you know what I mean?
It just depends
on the individual, really.
Yeah.
Do you get recognised, Fabian?
I get recognised. I've been shooting in Philadelphia at the minute and I've got a sort of cop's haircut, and it happens very rarely while I'm out there. I think when the show's on, like, it happens a lot.
Mm.
You know, but I mean, it weirdly, I don't know. It doesn't feel like it happens that much. In and out. I mean, when the show's on, like Matt said, when the show's on, it does.
Then it's slightly more
present. I've been like in Philadelphia like for the last 3 months. I think I've been recognised, you know, like a really small handful of time.
You've got a less distinctive look than Matt.
Yeah, come on. Look at it. I mean, ageless.
Stephen Moffat was at pains to point out for 3 years, people recognise the chin first. He's very good write things like that in.
That's very true. Yeah. But I'm one of the great chins.
He does, isn't he?
In all of...
I don't know if he's one of the great chins.
He's got a great sort of side profile.
Yeah.
Well, I have a disappearing bottom jaw.
You're
the side.
Beautifully handsome.
Completely.
I won't hear of it.
Too stunningly handsome.
Yeah, thank you.
Just make that clear. This season feels even more dragony than the previous season to me, from what I've seen so far. And you have the biggest, I feel, dragon of them all.
Well, I mean, he's not technically the biggest, but he is the coolest.
Ewan's got the biggest one, isn't he?
Yeah, I think.
Okay, maybe not technically. Fair enough.
But he's the coolest, isn't he? He's got the most personality.
I think so.
He's grumpy.
What's your one called?
Caraxes.
Yeah.
He's, you know, irreverent and grumpy, and there's a strange violence to him. It's like
to match you, pretty much.
Yeah, there's a strange kind of symbiosis between the two.
And how are those scenes to film when you're aboard the dragon?
What is that? What happens?
Yeah,
you're on a plinth basically, and it's like someone's there with a remote control, and it moves. It's like, you know, it's like being on a very slow bucking bronco, and it, and then they fire wind and rain at you. Which, you know, and you're just up in the air and you're sort of...
I'm not good on a bucking bronco, I'll tell you that for free.
Really? How many bucking broncos have you been on?
I went on one...
I don't think many people are.
I went on one in LA in a bar
When?
There's a video. I tell you what, stiff as a board flamingo, mate.
It's not easy though, mate. And also, it's utterly pointless. Do you want to go on this bucking bronco?
Yeah. No. I didn't realize you had to sort of relax the upper half of your... You know what I mean?
To go with
it, dude. So I was just like, my body
and
was
then
just,
you're off.
Oh, buddy. And often in pain.
Yeah, well, often, that's the thing. We're the sort that would come off and like tear our Achilles or something.
You must be expert at bucking bronco now.
I am. I was thinking of moving to Texas and joining a ranch.
I'd watch.
Yeah, you'd watch and applaud at my indignity, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You get to do some, again, maybe not in episode one or two, but you get to do some reaction shots when the dragons appear. Now, what makes you feel most silly? Like being in the middle of Matt actually riding a dragon or having to kind of respond?
What makes me feel so silly is we had to do like me and Freddie Fox, like when we're riding the dragon, when we're riding the horses, right? They won't let us gallop. So we have to actually go.
They won't let you gallop on the horses?
No, you can canter, but you can't gallop.
Really?
And so you have to sort of go really slow on the horse. They'll walk it, but you have to act like you're going really fast.
Oh, wow.
So, and then they'll basically cheat it so it looks like you're going fast, mate. And I can't tell you how much I would laugh when
but
I watched Freddie
learn
Fox do that
to gallop.
Freddie did it so the way Freddie would commit, just thinking about it now, the way Freddie would commit, and the horse was going like this.
And Freddie's looking amazing
and
on it.
Freddie's like going crazy, mate. And I just couldn't. There's one take usable where I wasn't laughing, mate. I couldn't stop.
Brilliant.
And do you often sit there when you're in the middle of a drag ride saying, this is preposterous, this is what I'm living?
I was up on a dragon in the middle of Wales with like side rain. And I was looking, there was like, you know, I could see sheep for miles. And I just thought, this is absolutely bonkers. Like, you know, what a mad thing to do.
Yeah, the sheep must have added to that.
I think the sheep were looking at me thinking, who the fuck is that guy? Yeah. And why is he up so high?
But it's true.
I have to ask you, Matt, I've been waiting to ask you this for a long time about your role in one of the, in a show featuring one of the most indelible characters in TV history. This time with Alan Partridge. Oh. When you had that brilliant guest slot.
Oh,
have you seen that, Fabian?
No, I haven't. But he was telling me he was going to do it when we were doing House of Dragon. Is that when you did it?
Yeah, probably. It was in and around there, yeah. I mean,
remember you saying, I think I'm going to go and do a little bit on Alan Partridge.
Yeah,
something.
And you know how much I like it.
I know, loves it. Genuinely.
I mean, it's my mastermind subject. Same. And I'm talking in every dimension of it, from Mid-Morning Matters to Welcome to the Places of My Life. I mean, I think it is the single greatest comic creation of my lifetime on TV. And, you know, and I put that up against the greats of Blackadder, you know, some others do have them.
Absolutely. You know, and did it live up to your hopes?
I mean, I got to meet Alan Partridge. I mean, and Coogan's a hero of mine anyway, and he was great. You know, he was there and it was Alan. And
what are you yourself?
I've had journalists from The Guardian who come to try and give him a hard time, and then Alan slowly realizes that he's on top. But what was interesting about it was that I came up I came on the morning and I was playing someone completely different. I was playing a rich tech guy who came in, and then Steve went, no, we're going to make someone else. We're going to make it someone else. And so I'm doing it all on auto cue. And then when you rewatch
it,
they rewrote the whole thing there.
Do they do that a lot?
I think so, yeah.
That's brilliant.
That must have been stressful.
Oh, I'm glad I asked.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. We've run out of time.
Oh, nice thanks, Boyd. Lovely to see you. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Take care, mate.
That was Boydie with Matt Smith and Fabian Frankel. Time now for this week's news. What do we have? Do you know what? I'm gonna hijack the first story because we get castigated for our failure to appreciate, understand, or properly cover animation. So I'm going to say there was a trailer for season 2 of Netflix's Arcane, aka the greatest animated TV series of all time. I was psyched and stoked and just over the moon about the whole thing, and I loved it. I thought it was fabulous. And I will say, I've said this before, the quality of animation, the visuals of Arcane, it is absolutely gorgeous to look at, which is, I think, one of the reasons why I love it so much. It looks wonderful.
Mm, I would second that. As a animation doubter.
Yes. An anime twat, as we call ourselves.
Yeah.
I'm saying it is a big week for James Graham. Okay. Because we've had the announcement that he's going to deliver the McTaggart lecture at Edinburgh Festival. Not only that, but we've seen the first look pictures of Sherwood season 2, which were great. But also it's been announced that Channel 4 are commissioning Brian and Margaret, a new drama by James, starring Steve Coogan and Harriet Walter. They will be playing Brian and Margaret, which is all about the final ever television interview of Maggie Thatcher by journalist Brian Walden. So,
Do you remember that, Kay? We both know
that I was a twinkle in my parents' eye at that point.
You were a twinkle. I'm old enough to actually remember watching it live. So, yeah.
How was it, Boyd?
It was fascinating. Okay.
As our correspondent of that time.
Yeah, there was a theme here. Yeah, no, it was absolutely fascinating. So,
can I ask a question? Mm. Unrelated. While we're speaking of incredibly long-lived people, when is Interview with the Vampire Season 2 coming to the UK, Boydy? I need to know. It's upsetting me.
Oh, I don't know, do I? No.
It's like, hasn't half the season, more than half of it aired in the US?
Yeah, but remember
and
how
here
long
we
had
are,
to wait?
Waiting patiently.
Remember how long we had to wait for that? Yeah, I mean...
But normally, that normally happens. Like when that happens with the first season, the second one normally is quite punctual because it's all about when it finds a home. Once it's found a home here in the UK, normally they're quite punctual.
Oh, what, like... Hacks, exactly. Thank you. Yes, Hacks.
I don't know why I reminded you of that, because you've just been non-stop talking about it.
I thought you were just about to go on another Ryan Murphy tale there.
No.
It was going to be about American Horror Story.
No.
Can we just go back to the fact that the big James Graham news? Is no one else excited about Sherwood? I mean, we kind of glossed over it.
No, I'm completely excited about Sherwood, to the point where I was going to have that exact same story and in exact same structure that you told it just now, and you totally ruined my one news story of the week, frankly. Although, here's what I can add in the name-dropping stakes, as you know, one of my great skills of all time.
He's your best friend.
True.
Well, I went to see my brother recently and his family a couple of weeks, I think about two weekends ago, and I got the tube back, and who should walk on to the tube but David Morrissey? Actor David Morrissey, star of Sherwood and many other things. And he sat next to me and we had a lovely chat about said show and other stuff coming up. So it was very, it was good.
Now, did he give you any details of when it will be airing?
I think I did ask him. I think he said pretty soon, I think was his answer. Yeah, so I'm guessing, you know.
Non-specific.
Well, apologies, Kate. I mean, also.
Well, listen, I just want you to always be switched on as the pilot roving reporter.
Oh, I was switched on. I think we would get in trouble if we said when it was on is the other thing.
Oh, fine. All right, apologies. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, don't want to give secrets away, state secrets. There was another bit of the most exciting K-related recommissioning news of the week, surely, as well. You must have seen yesterday. This was revealed yesterday. Even though I am on holiday this week, I still have my email on. I saw this come through at 15:37 hours, which is that Big Boys has been recommissioned for 30 years.
It has.
Yes.
It has indeed.
Do you know what? And weirdly, yesterday I saw John Poynting in the street.
Well, I mean...
By our office. Yeah, I mean, it's just what a full
spooky.
Circle moment. Yeah.
Come to deliver the news personally.
No, he was,
of course.
Probably, but he was also venturing into Sainsbury's, but yeah.
Venturing.
Exciting news.
Venturing into the perils of Sainsbury's. clearly more of a Waitrose person. Also, House of the Dragon has also been recommissioned for a third season ahead of season two's arrival. Yeah. It was actually really
that feels
so
like
exciting.
The least surprising news ever.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
That's been renewed. The Boys, as we said already, is now ending with season 5.
Did we talk about the fact that the BBC have acquired Apple's Never Fall, based on Liane Moriarty's novel last week? I mean,
I've never heard of this novel, but then I don't read a lot of Liane Moriarty's books. So.
Well, just because, you know, obviously she was the author of Big Little Lies, Nine Perfect Strangers, so I'm quite excited. I mean, I didn't really love Nine Perfect Strangers, but as we know, Big Little Lies was great. So, I'm excited about that. Also, other news, comedy news, which I'm excited about because I liked the first series of Alma's Not Normal, and BBC have commissioned the second series. No, well, they've commissioned it, actually. Sorry, it was First Look Pictures we saw. So that'll see the return of Sophie Whelan. She wrote it and stars in it as Alma, the nutty Boltonian and her eccentric family.
One of James's favourites, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hate it?
I didn't hate it. Terry loved it.
Yeah, it's great.
It didn't quite gel with my particular sensibilities, but it was well put together.
James, that is beyond parody.
Yeah, it didn't gel with my particular sensibilities.
It did not gel with my particular sensibilities.
No, I think there's been some recent. I thought Alms. I remember at the time, Alms Not Normal, and also, what's the other one I really like? Hellraisers. There's been a. Yeah.
Well, speaking of things that I really like, obviously I've mentioned already Interview with the Vampire, which is tardy in its arrival on these shores. But just to sort of make things even worse, there is another entry in Anne Rice's immortal universe, which has been touted. So Anne Rice's The Talamasca will be joining Anne Rice's Interview with the Vampire and Anne Rice's The Lives of the Mayfair Witches, or whatever it's called. And this is about the Talamasca, who are like a group of supernatural nerds. They're basically like watchers. Like, they watch the witches, they watch the vampires, and then they write about it in books, like big old academic nerds. And they remind me of the Watchers from Highlander, the series, but I'm sure that's not intentional. So they're going to be the glue that bind Interview the Vampire series and the Mayfair series together.
The Mayfair.
Kay in particular, very excited.
Okay, over.
Even you didn't really like the Mayfair series, though, did you?
I didn't finish it, has to be said. And I've read all of the Mayfair books, and I still didn't read
one indictment. What an indictment of that. Yeah. I mean, Interview with the Vampire is very good, but yeah.
It's brilliant, yeah. Mm. Yeah, but Mayfair, I mean, I meant to get back to Mayfair, and I still, you know, I haven't ruled it out. I may yet come back to Mayfair.
I think it says a lot.
But, yeah. Well, we should find something that Kay will be excited about, and I'm going to say Hijack Season 2 has added Toby Jones.
Yes.
Whoa. So, you know.
No, that, I mean,
that's really that
Toby Jones being added to anything is good news. the man is a living legend, yeah. Who once came...
Come on.
He once came around to your house and did what? What happened?
No. I was once in a New York cafe restaurant with my mate, Neil, and Toby Jones came over to have a chat. And honestly...
Oh, my God. In my New
mate,
York?
In New York, yeah. He was doing a play. And my mate... And honestly, my mate Neil was at... massive fan of Toby Jones. Like, he loves his stuff and he loves him. As that's how it was so like it was so impressive that Toby Jones came over for a little chat. Yeah, it was brilliant.
Toby Jones once nearly ran over me on his bike in Soho.
Deliberate.
Oh, wow.
That is my Toby
Deliberate.
Jones
that's
close
quite a good
encounter
claim to fame.
He's wearing a little helmet and he was on his bike and I can't remember, I know the road it was, but I can't remember the name of it. But yes, he nearly hit me on his bike. It was my fault, not his, I should point that out. He was driving very safely on his bike on the road and I just
also he's wearing a helmet, crucially.
And he was wearing a helmet because he's a very responsible man. So, yeah.
Can I tell you lastly about an email that stopped me in my tracks? So it was an email from Paramount Plus that was announcing a UK original drama starring Diane Kruger and Joe Joyner. Those names in this one sentence I didn't expect to see, but it's brilliant because they're both fantastic actresses. And it's called Little Disasters. It's based on the novel by best-selling author Sarah Vaughan, and it's a complex psychological thriller exploring female friendships and motherhood. So I'm excited about that.
Good for Jo Joyner. Yeah,
she's great.
Would now be a time to mention that I don't know who that is.
She used to be in EastEnders and she's been in quite a few of the Channel 5. And of course, Channel 5, Paramount owns Channel 5 or whatever. So, yeah, it's...
Can I just say, I did note how his voice changed when he said EastEnders.
Yeah, yeah.
He went,
Did you see this week, Sophie Petzl, friend of the pod, tweeting about how people who write for soap operas like EastEnders, how do they get treated in the industry? And that's often...
treated like shit, probably.
Well, steady. Certainly, it's not.
By James.
I'm paraphrasing.
Specifically by me.
But how they're not, it's not respected. Yeah, and often that's held against them somehow, which is extraordinary, really. So, you know, it's one of the few ways in for young up and coming TV writers.
Chelsea would beg to differ on that point.
No. I think you're talking about now. You know, there's loads of examples of great TV writers who started out in soaps. Everyone would
Tony
agree on
Jordan.
That. I think she's more talking about right now. If you've worked.
Oh, no, I don't mean she'd disagree with the principle here. I think disagree that they should be looked down on.
Oh, yes,
obviously, because she's an incredible writer who started out in EastEnders.
I'm glad we clarified that. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. But I thought it was a very.
Yes, we're all on the same page.
I was shocked. I didn't know that. And I was shocked at that idea that someone that if you get a writing job on a soap opera and then it's held against you. I mean, that is just unbelievable.
Wait. Boyd, were you genuinely shocked by that?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, because I know what you're saying. There's a difference between the way that soaps are regarded generally and a writer getting a break and then that being held against them. That is a different thing, and that's what I'm
saying.
Doesn't
seem to make a lot of sense. Like Russell T. Davies used to write on Why Don't You?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
It's like, exactly.
Sally Wainwright.
Yeah, for it to be held against you is what I'm saying is surprising. Maybe I'm obviously naive and an idiot. I don't deny it. Kay is nodding. Anyway, can I just say my favourite headline, news headline of the week, was in Variety, which said Orlando Bloom tapped into Buddhist meditation during Grueling to the Edge docuseries.
Wow.
Yeah. And this is, do you know Orlando Bloom's made a kind of like a survival, like action adventure show? Do you know about this?
No.
Yeah.
No. What channel did you say?
It's for Peacock, not the NBC owned network, not the sitcom that we're about to review. It's called Orlando Bloom : To the Edge. And in it, he kind of like does things like get thrown out of a plane. He climbs a 400-foot Utah mountain. It's just bizarre. Who knew? Orlando Bloom, adventure guy.
I just can't I can't take him seriously ever since I read that interview with him about the day in the life of.
Oh yeah,
was it in the Times or something? Yeah. It was just so horrific.
And he also paddleboarded naked with.
Yes, I wondered if you were going to bring up the paddleboard.
Of course.
Yes. Yes. It was unclear which was the oar in that particular picture. That's what I'm going to say.
Oh, my gosh.
anyway.
Something, I don't know what is going on with you in the last few weeks.
But yeah.
Something's definitely happening.
Well, let's bring it screaming back to news then. So Tokyo Vice has been cancelled over at Max. So that's the end of that. Sorry, Michael.
Have you watched the second series?
Nope.
The second.
Did I finish the first series? Nope.
I've been meaning to say this for weeks, actually, because the second series just kind of dropped on the BBC, weirdly, without much fanfare. Because
it did.
I'm not sure if we mentioned it, but yeah, that was a bit weird, I thought.
Hunter Schafer has been cast in a major role in Blade Runner 2099, the series.
Yeah.
Exciting about that. That's a series I really, really want to see. What else have we had in the news? Star Trek Starfleet Academy has cast Paul Giamatti. I can't really do a Paul Giamatti impression, but I thought I'd give it a go and see what happened. It turns out it didn't work out very well, so let's never speak of it again. But Paul Giamatti is going to be a villain in Starfleet Academy. So, Kay in particular, as always, excited about that. And we saw first looks at two Apple TV Plus shows. We saw the first look at the new season of Silo, which was, let's be honest, Rebecca Ferguson in a suit. And we saw the first look at Severance Season 2, which, let's be honest, was Adam Scott with a bunch of balloons. But nevertheless, they may not have been the most sort of, shall we say, light-shedding pictures, but they were exciting because they are shows that we are excited about.
Before we wrap up news, can I offer a quick apology for my story last week where I suggested that Jonathan Groff turned down the opportunity to appear in Glee. Crucially, I left out the word initially, which someone picked up on. I was like, yeah, sorry.
Now, this was flagged on Twitter and I was like, oh my God, I knew this because I want to say this is the case. I don't remember. Isn't he the lead singer of Vocal Adrenaline, who's like the rival group?
I didn't watch Glee, which is how
I'm
this
pretty
all
sure
happened.
He is.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so I 100% knew that he was at Glee. I don't know why. I suspect I just wasn't listening when you were talking.
So can we just say that it was your fault then?
Yeah, we can say it's
okay,
my fault.
Cool.
That's fine.
Thanks.
Another story I quickly want to share is that Man on Fire, the excellent Tony Scott Naughty's thriller Man on Fire, which had Denzel Washington in it and a very, very young Dakota Fanning, is getting a TV adaptation. And Yahya Abdul-Mateen II is going to be starring in that. Chris's art is death.
No.
Which is my Christopher Walken. No? No, anyway, he's going to be playing Creasy in Man on Fire. It's going to be directed by Stephen Caple Jr.
Cool.
So there, I guess that's kind of it from news. I will say, and there's something that I forgot to mention during the What We've Been Watching section, and that's that obviously I've been pressing on with The Acolyte because we are recording spoiler specials over on the Empire Spoiler Specials feed. If you don't already subscribe to spoiler specials on Empire, then please do so. If only to listen to me being entirely sort of unbothered by the new season of The Acolyte, which I'm still not quite gelling with. But as we record now, we are 3 episodes in, 1 more to go until I've caught up to where I was before. I don't know, we'll see. I've been rewatching these as I go. I have concerns, but we'll see. We'll see.
Spoiler special listeners on tenterhooks waiting to see James.
They are on tenterhooks. Absolutely.
If The Acolyte can win James round in the
Who did you record with?
Yeah, not one of us, that's for sure.
Well, I considered asking Kay.
Yeah.
I considered asking her, but since she didn't even bother to watch it for this podcast, I didn't think she was going to watch it.
How dare you? It's true.
Boydie, would you like to come on and talk about The Acolyte on the next Spoiler Special podcast? No. I'm extending you an official Jedi invitation.
No, you're all right.
He just wanted to be asked. It's always nice to be asked.
There we go. Yes, fine. Okay, super. So yeah, maybe go and find that on the Empire Spoiler Specials feed. But that is the end of our news section. I guess we segue seamlessly now onto reviews, and we begin with We Were the Lucky Ones on Disney Plus. And this aired on Hulu in the US in March, actually, and is an adaptation of the 2017 book by Georgia Hunter, which is kind of semi-autobiographical. It's certainly based on her family. And this one depicts the events of the Holocaust from the perspective of the Kirk family, whose life in Poland is basically destroyed with the Nazi invasion. Boydie, what can you tell us about We Were the Lucky Ones?
Well, it begins with an incredibly powerful on-screen message. It says, by the end of the Holocaust, 90% of Poland's 3 million Jews were annihilated. 90% of Poland's 3 million Jews were annihilated, which is as sobering a message as you could possibly imagine to start a show with. And as you say, it's based on Georgia Hunter's best-selling novel, inspired by it. The true story of a family who did live in Poland when the war broke out. What's interesting about it, I think, is that this is a middle class family doing pretty well in Radom in Poland. I think they've got like the parents, Nahuma and Sol, played by Robin Weigert and Leo Ashkenazi, have like a clothing kind of shop, kind of boutique kind of thing, and she sews the dresses together and stuff like that. They have five adult children, including characters played by Henry Lloyd Hughes from Killing Eve, Logan Lerman, who's been in obviously loads of stuff, Perks of Being a Wallflower, etc. He plays an up-and-coming composer who's living in Paris most of the time. And Amit Rahav, who's the handsome young guy in Unorthodox, the brilliant Netflix Jewish drama. He's an Israeli actor. He plays one of Jacob, the law student. So this is like, and as it begins, it paints a picture of there is, it does start, as all Peak TV has to do. It's been mentioned many times with like a set in the present, if you like, of the story, and then it flashes back quite quickly to...
Two of the three this week do that, incidentally.
Yes, indeed. Two out of three, exactly. So it starts out as a portrayal of this family, really, and the fascinating different characters, how they're getting on in Poland. And then and we meet them kind of celebrating Passover in 1938. And then there's a kind of flash forward to 1939. And one of the characters hears on the news the Nazis have invaded Poland and that the British and the Allies have declared war. And thus World War II begins. And what I think is kind of brilliant about this show is that it very cleverly establishes quite a big cast of characters, these five adult children of this couple and their various partners, etc. And you get to know them quite quickly. And they do a very good job, I think, in terms of the script of actually getting to know these characters. And then it kind of portrays how this painful act affects each member of the family. It focuses on some more than others, but it does an amazing job of juggling. I watched two or three episodes of juggling the different strands of the story. You know, what does the young guy, the Logan Lerman's character, do when he's based in Paris? Does he try and leave? Does he try and go back to Poland to help his family? It's like there's a narrowing of options quite steadily as it goes on, and more you see the Nazis arriving in their neighborhood and how what that actually means to them and how they're going to be taken away possibly, or how they're going to try and hide from them. And can they should they change their names, you know, to anglicize their names, to hide their Jewishness, all of this. It's really I think it's one of the best depictions I've seen on a TV drama of the effect that something like Nazism and the Holocaust has on people. And I thought it was really powerful, really well done, great cast. And I know these comparisons are invidious, but I bring this up just as a kind of like almost like a thing about how much attention is paid to certain shows and not others. So the most recent show that dealt with this similar subject was The Tattooist of Auschwitz, which we reviewed. And I thought it was a perfectly decent show. I didn't think it was a great show. And that was on Sky and had a big, you know, loads of publicity. It's done really well, I think, for Sky, loads of viewers. It's based on a more famous book, I would say, than this book, I think. But I think it's a bit of a shame that this hasn't got more publicity. It's on Disney Plus. It was on Hulu, as you said, James, at the beginning. For me, this is like much, much better. I mean, I say comparisons are ridiculous. I thought this was a much more impressive piece of drama about this particular subject matter. I think it's a shame that it hasn't got that much publicity on Disney Plus compared to other shows. And I hope people watch it because I think it's really good.
It feels wrong to say that I enjoyed it, but I did enjoy it, the storytelling, and I think that you're completely right. What I liked about it most is that each character has their own journey and story to tell. So you're seeing the experience of war through so many of these, you know, from every perspective of those going through it. Particularly it focuses on Helena, who is the youngest of the children, who's very idealistic. And, you know, she wants to stand firm. She's insistent that her partner shouldn't leave because the young men are drafted into the reserves. And she wants she thinks her parents should go to work still, even though they're, you know, they're resistant because they want to stay home. And then you get the sobering reality in this one scene where the German soldiers are marching through the street. I just thought it was really well done. And it is a tough watch, of course, because we know, you know, it's based on reality, but I think it is a necessary watch because, you know, lest we forget.
Well, also not even that, like it feels, it's strange to take, because obviously the Holocaust can be dealt with a number of different ways. This is a very family-centric take on this. Like it never leaves this family, and it never pans out to give you a sort of broader historical context to it. It's about the personal family experience and the ties between them. And I found that a bit baffling as the show begins, because you're not quite sure who these people are, and you're trying to get, but by the end of the first episode, you get a real feel for the intricacies of the family dynamic, but obviously also the sort of mounting dread of what's coming, essentially. Also with this one, it's that because of how it begins, because it doesn't begin, because Tattoo of Auschwitz moves very, very quickly. It is all about, you know, the liquidation of the ghettos and then moving to Auschwitz. That happens quite soon in the first episode of Tattooist. With this one, you know, it's sort of communal garden anti-Semitism in Poland they're dealing with. And then the Germans invade. And then we as the viewer know exactly where this is going. And it's that sense, you're like, for the love of God, leave, for the love of God, leave. And they're like, they don't have any, you know, it's impossible to believe that something like the Holocaust could have happened. So at that time, like, there was no one predicted it. No one understood what was coming. And they were all like, it will get better. This is a home. We're not going to leave. And the sort of the tragedy of that just really weighs on you as you watch this. And I think also because this doesn't focus on the more, I'm trying to think of an adjective to describe it, but the more overtly horrific things, like we see in Tattooist of Auschwitz, like you see in anything in a Holocaust drama, when you get to see, you know, the death camps, the murders, the torture, all of that, you know, that's very heavy. What this is, it's the insidious creep, the erosion of rights, the dehumanizing of a group. And weirdly, it hits harder in some ways because, you know, with, not to get political, but with the rise of a certain amount of intolerance in certain parts of the world at the moment, it feels very much like this hits quite close to home. And seeing what this began as and knowing where it leads, I think is quite chilling when you look at some of the things that happen every day and some of the attitudes that people have. And, you know, looking at history, seeing how easy these things can begin as something quite throwaway and become something, you know, historically catastrophic. So I found this very powerful.
You do sense the building dread, as you say, but also it was really interesting because the parents are very proud people, and they're like, they want to stand their ground because they're like, no, this is our home, and but you understand that. So even though you know it's come, you know what is coming, you're like, you know, you want them to obviously check, you know, to do the not the right thing, but you want them to survive. But equally, you're like, yeah, you can see why they feel like that.
You're right, 100%.
I thought, yeah, it's very clever how we know what's going to happen, you know, and they don't, and the slow realization of certain things, of just how serious and just how unbelievably ruthless, you know, the Nazis are being, is what works so well. Yeah, it really takes you through the experience. I think that's what feels unique about it to me.
And people forget. I mean, maybe they don't forget. Maybe they do. Now, let's just say, I'll speak for myself. I sometimes forget that it didn't go from 0 to 60 immediately.
Yeah,
it wasn't like you were living a normal life and then suddenly you were in a death camp. It was it was like, you know, the frog in the boiling water. It was a gradual erosion of rights until people thought, oh, there'll be time to get out, until there was no time to get out. And like, and one of the characters in this first episode says this, there will only be so many chances to leave before there are no chances left. And it's like, and once you've missed your last chance, that is it. And it's just, yeah, it's really, really chilling and really upsetting. And I think, as you say, like, it is an important watch, but it's also, it's very compelling as well. It's very compelling.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And when and where does this air, Boydie?
It's on Disney Plus from Wednesday, the 19th of June, 2024.
Disney Plus, then, we were the lucky ones. Next up, in a rather radical tonal shift, we have the second series of Peacock. This is Alan Mustafa's comedy about a hapless physical trainer at a local gym. Now, I had a weird deja vu watching this. Bordy, did we review the first series of this on this podcast?
Yes.
We did. Because I was watching, I was thinking, I don't know what this is, I don't know what this is, but I feel like I've seen it before.
Yeah, we did.
Okay, fine. So I'm not going mad. I have seen this before.
You're not going mad.
Fine. I did. I mean, this is 100% when we did season one was the last time I saw the inside of a gym. So perhaps that's what was... what was the issue here? But Kay, as someone who I'm assuming has seen the inside of a gym slightly more recently than me, tell us about Peacock.
Yes. So this is, it arrived in 2020, as you said, and I think we only had three episodes, but now it's been given a six-part second series. It is written by Steve Stamp and Ben Murray of People Just Do Nothing fame. And Sipa, as you mentioned, Alan Mustafa, is a People Just Do Nothing alumni as well. And he stars as Andy Peacock, who is this sort of lovable doofus personal trainer who has a more than a hint of David Brent about him. He, when we find him in this second series, he's put on a bit of timber. He's not feeling good about himself. He's very insecure, just generally. And so instead, like, he's trying to make himself feel good about himself. And so he has a new role in the gym as the body positive PT, who promotes self-love, whatever state you're in. And so he's just trying to get on with things. He's not feeling great about himself. He is, he's still got his rivalry with his nemesis, Jay, played by Lucien Lavascount, who is a six-pack Adonis compared to him. And they are they're in battle, basically, because the gym manager has been kicked out. And so the top job is up for grabs. And so, yeah, it all goes down. I can predict you might find this very silly, James, but I do find this kind of funny, and I think it's well observed because you do meet these sort of characters. I mean, obviously these are heightened versions of the people you'd meet, but certain observations they make about people who go to the gym, and like particularly the character of Jay, I thought it was really well done. So I'm really happy they got this second series, and I found it very amusing.
Yeah, I think it's really funny. I'm trying to remember what the original the original verdict was from James.
I suspect I hated it.
Every now and then you surprise us with one of your, you know.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that it probably did not gel with my particular sensibilities.
Yeah, I think you're right. It was definitely one of those.
We need to get on a t-shirt.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. The gelling did not happen, I don't think, with this one. But it is funny, and I think a lot of that. First of all, I love the idea of an intense workplace rivalry that gets completely out of hand. It's like me and Kay have that situation.
Yeah,
quite a lot.
Yeah. There'll only be one winner here, boys.
Yeah, and Kay gets quite obsessive about it, and you know, get very furious. She's a bit of a David Brent figure herself in many ways.
No grace, a compliment has been paid.
I josh obviously. But I think the comedy is at its strongest when it is his character, Andy, going to ridiculous extents to try and challenge the Lucien Lavascount's character, and that is really funny, and it is he's absolutely transparent in the fact that he is inspired by David Brent in many ways in the performance, and they've talked about before the whole People Just Do Nothing cast were inspired by The Office because obviously it's one of the greatest things of all time. Sipa, as he's known, Alan Mustafa, is so funny in the role. He's absolutely brilliant, and I also really like the scenes of him at home with Mandeep Dhillon as his girlfriend.
Yes. She's great.
She's got a really good kind of like deadpan sudden realization that she's with going out with an absolute loser who will sit there, you know, eating his the takeaway and, you know, watching Love Island together. So I thought all that was really funny. But, you know, the character of Spooner, played by Thomas Gray, who is like this kind of lovely guy who he's at the moment living on a boat with got two kids. He's just had his partner's just had two twins. And he's kind of like the put upon kind of.
He's a foil.
He's the foil. Right. But he's such a nice, I think he's such an interesting character. And then there's a really nice scene at the end. And I know James is going to poo poo this whole thing, but
I can't help but say,
yeah, when in the end. Right.
Don't spoil it.
Alert.
Don't spoil it. No, 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 as someone pointed out, you can't say the spoiler and then go spoiler.
But I'm not going to. I'm joking. I'm not going to spoil.
All right.
But
he wasn't joking. He's now reverse verity.
No. I was making a joke about that person who corresponded said that I said spoiler alert. Anyway,
I see.
Anyway, a thing happens and it's a moving moment and his reaction to it was really sweet, and there is a sweet undercurrent about male friendship, toxic masculinity, and how to be less toxic with your masculinity. And I think in its slightly, not assuming, what word am I looking for? In its subtler than you'd expect from quite a broad show, which is why James is about to tell us why he hates it, because it is quite broad. It does have some sweet, moving, touching moments. And, you know, it earns them, I think, quite cleverly. So I really enjoy it. Yeah, I think it's good fun and moving and very well written by Steve Satt and Ben Murray, as you mentioned, and very, very well. The cast is great, by the way, as well. You know, Susan McComb has left, so she's not in anymore. She was brilliant in the first season.
She was so good as Liz.
She was so good. So it's a bit of a loss for her. But Callie Cook, who is woman of the moment, she's in loads of stuff. She was in that Doctor Who episode, Dot and Bubble, remember, is the main annoying woman in that. She's great. Mandy Dillon's great. Sophia DiMartino's great. So it's actually got a really good, quietly, they've assembled a really good cast for what is, I think, a very funny and sweet show.
Oh, gosh. I'm almost loath for him to start.
I'm not going to start laying into the show because it's like, it is exactly what you say. It is broad comedy, which I do not enjoy. It is also cringe, which I do not enjoy. There's really nothing about this for me. So I will grant you, it has a very good bench in terms of actors. Sophia DiMartino, I was quite surprised to see her in this. She was in the show. Great people in it. It is 100% not for me. Mm. I did not find it funny. I find broad comedy kind of low level irritating at the best of times. So it's just not my thing. But I'm big enough to admit that the failing is almost certainly mine in this particular case. But this is, it's most certainly not for me.
Yeah. Yes. That's fair enough.
So there we go. Peacock, which lands on BBC 123. Am I right in saying?
BBC 3, Tuesday, the 18th of June, 2024, 9 p.m. And it will all be available as a box set, of course, as they do always on the iPlayer at the same time.
From something that isn't my bag to something that almost certainly isn't Kay's bag, finally this week we have Beacon 23, which weirdly actually doesn't even air this week. It airs next week on Paramount Plus, but it aired a long time ago in the US. In fact, I think season 2 of this has actually aired in the US, not just season 1. And frankly, there was nothing else to review this week. It is a terrible week for television. So this is actually based on the short story by Hugh Howey, who also wrote the book that Silo is based on. Wool, and this stars Lena Headey and Stephen James as a kind of like an odd couple pair of wardens in a space lighthouse at the end of the universe in the 23rd century. Boydie, please shine some light on the space lighthouse show.
Well, I have to say, Hugh Howey likes a spiral staircase, doesn't he? Because you've got the big
spiral staircase
in Silo, which is like the whole of this massive ancient edifice that they live in. And then in this whole spaceship's built around a space station, kind of whatever it is, space lighthouse, is built around a massive spiral staircase as well. So that was intriguing. I was fascinated by that. I really like both the actors. Lena Headey, obviously, brilliant in Game of Thrones, legendary, given a terrible death scene in Game of Thrones, which she gets asked about in every interview. She does, quite rightly.
Oh, does she?
Yeah. And I was reading a couple of them recently, and she completely happily admits that she wasn't particularly happy with her death either on the show, Cersei's death. And Stephen James, as we think we pronounce it, he's always really good. He was in If Beale Street Could Talk, the Barry Jenkins film. He was in Homecoming, which is one of my favourite, least appreciated Prime Video shows. He was really good in that as a soldier, kind of coming back to this weird situation. And I think they're both really good. And I actually quite like the idea of like a kind of almost a two-hander. Well, it is a two-hander, but there are these AI kind of assistants that the characters have that pop up as beings, if you like, as human-type beings. But really, it is all about these two people stranded together in this situation, and neither of them quite trust the other, and they both seem to be lying to each other about how they've ended up in this empty space station lighthouse thing. And that's quite a good premise, I think. I think it's an interesting idea. And I like the kind of interplay between them. And even the interplay between, and there's like there's one, his AI guy is completely going on all the time about how he's killed someone relentlessly. It's like, shut the fuck up. It's like really annoying, obsessive AI thing. And it's got, visually, it's quite good, even though it is confined to this one location. It does feel a bit claustrophobic. And then you've got these images of the lighthouse and the sea smashing against it in a kind of like painting thing. You don't quite know that. So I quite enjoyed it all in all. It didn't quite have the obvious question always is, and I always, you know, at the end, it's always for me, which way I come down on the side of a show, whether I particularly like it or don't, or not dislike it, but just whether I'm going to carry on watching it is the key. Am I going to carry on watching Beacon 23? I don't think so. But I did enjoy it. I just didn't have quite enough for me in the end. Like she's finding some rocks, some mysterious rocks that he's very careful. He doesn't want her to find, and so the mystery is what the fuck is happening with these rocks, right? That's not enough for me. I have to say, I don't
the
care.
The geological that, mystery yeah, didn't pull you.
I'm not sure the geological mystery is going to tie me down for two more seasons of this. But it's good. I would say it's well done, well acted. Decent script, not an amazing script, but there's my favorite line Lena Headey says is, well, he says, what have you been doing with some? She says, apart from wanking. I thought, yeah, I had to like do a double take. I was like, did she just say apart from wanking?
Listen, because, she's being edgy.
Because it was such a tonal shift, to use a phrase, because everything had been very serious and like, you know, although, and suddenly she's talking about wanking in the middle of it. And by the way, I think it's good that Lena gives her, is in her normal, quite a little bit northern English accent. It's quite good after, you know, it just felt a bit refreshing to have her doing that accent, talking about wanking in the middle of this self-serious, heavy sci-fi show. So that was my highlight.
Well, it's the, like the setup kind of to me screamed like, you know, noughties, 90s, you know, sci-fi channel original. Like it had a lot of that. Even the title Beacon 23 has that kind of like, I kind of thought I knew what this was going to be. Was pleasantly surprised though, because the budget is higher than a lot of those shows used to be and which a lot of them are even now. Like it feels quite glossy and well put together. The effects are good as well. Really convincing. So you don't feel like any corners have been cut. I mean, perhaps it's because they don't have to pay that many actors because it's a relatively small cast. They can save money. And they've got great actors in it as well. So really good performances. Also, like, so the story is extremely judiciously parceled out. Like, it is a slow burn. They are not in any rush to get anywhere. So I'm not going to say ponderous, but it is deliberately paced. That said, I was quite hooked on, because there's a few different mysteries. There's the geological mystery, there's who is she, there's who is he, what are their motivations, because there's lots of secrets between them. So very, very curious about that. And by all accounts, from what I've read, this season, the first half of it is quite deliberate, and then it all picks up and goes pell-mell 1,000 miles an hour for the second half. So I think it will pick up pace. But I'm not going to say I'm going to watch more of this, but I have added it to the sofa list. It is on the sofa list. I plan to watch more of it because actually I was quite into it. It's my bag, isn't it? But yeah, I liked it.
Yeah,
it is very me. So yeah, I thought it was good. Kay, I came over to your desk in the office yesterday when you were watching it, and I think the look on your face at that point spoke volumes. But please do tell us what you made of Beacon 23.
No, it will surprise you, actually, because I enjoyed it more than I thought I would. And I think that enjoyment came from the fact that I understood it more than I thought I would. most sci-fi shows you force me to watch are so complex or just beyond the realms of my comprehension that I find them frustrating / zone out. But I think I understood most of it, which is a bonus. But saying that, if I understood it, I wondered if that wasn't good news for hardcore sci-fi fans, because there was an element of me that wondered if this was a bit basic. And I was going to ask you, because I just thought some of the dialogue, there were patches of it when I was like, felt, you know, not particularly elevated. But also like in terms of like, no, I didn't have
elevated
an issue.
Wanking can end badly, just so you know.
But yeah, no, in terms of like the drama of it, because as Boyd says, my main note is the mission to find the rocks isn't very exciting.
Well, because we don't seem to, I mean, like, I at this point do not understand why I'm supposed to care about these rocks. There's something special about these rocks, but they are, let's be honest, rocks. So like, I can only be so invested in the rocks.
Yeah, but it just seemed to me like, considering that's the main thing, I know it's also like who they are and, you know, if either of them's lying and stuff like that, but the main thing is she is on this mission to find these rocks. He seems to like be trying to, you know, stop her from doing that. It relies heavily on the fact that you've got to give a shit about these rocks, and I just don't. So I can comprehensively and without doubt say I'm not going to watch another episode.
So the reviews of this have described it as quite cerebral sci-fi, which I was quite surprised by, because I didn't find it to be overtly cerebral in this episode. It wasn't anywhere near as basic as I feared it would be, as a lot of those old network sci-fi shows often were, very basic. But perhaps, as I said, it's a slow burn. Perhaps it becomes slightly more abstract as it goes along. I don't know. I quite want to find out.
It's not that cerebral at all, is it? That's weird. Yeah.
I think, let's just say, and I'm saying this myself, if I get it, I don't think it's that cerebral sci-fi.
I think, you know what I think it
in
is?
In terms
I think,
of sci-fi.
I think it's because it's in this setting, this confined setting with these two characters.
Yes. And their AI. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not complex.
It has like the patina of being cerebral, but it actually isn't. Do you know what I mean? It's got like the, you'd think, oh, this is quite challenging. You know, because it's just, but it isn't really. Yeah.
Oh, see, I thought the opposite. Like when you said that, I thought because it's set in this very constricted like place. For me, that's why it's not complex, because I don't have to understand all the machinations.
Well, see, this is what I was thinking. I wondered whether you'd got on with this, because even though it's literally set in space, I thought it's still just two people in a confined space dealing with their problems and their lies and their secrets and, frankly, rocks, which you find out in the garden. So, you know what? So literally down to earth. And yes, there's a hologram, and yes, there's a robot in it, but ultimately, there's enough kind of human stuff in there that I guess it, you know, you didn't have to, it wasn't foundation, you know, get your head around, you know, that stuff.
It was not foundation, I can confirm. So what I'm saying is Beacon 23 rocks, no,
it literally has rocks in it.
Yeah, Fraggle Rock, yes, they're the rocks, you know, that's the kind of rock I'm interested in.
Okay, Beacon 23 then, which airs on the Paramount Plus, Boydie, not this week at all, next week.
No, yeah,
on Thursday.
Yeah, the 27th, which is for some reason, listeners, Thursday the 27th of June has turned into the busiest night of television in history, and then there's like nothing else on the following week either.
I know.
The following week is going to be really challenging, I warn you now. Oh, I don't think there's any new scripted show, just for our listeners, forewarned, because you've got Wimbledon, the Euros, and the election all happening in the same week. And
maybe we'll do a pilot TV election special.
We might have to do a pilot TV election special. Yeah.
Or cover Wimbledon. No, I think genuinely, there are like eight new shows starting next Thursday. Yeah. So what we'll probably do is do some of them and then pump the others next week. But we'll figure it out for you. But hey, what else is out this week? And I can answer that question quite succinctly. Nothing. Nothing else is out this week.
Pretty much.
It is a dreadful, dreadful week for television. In fact, Sittle is out this week that we don't even have a show to review on Pilot Plus, because there is nothing else. So what we're actually going to do is we are going to do our long-awaited review of Mr. In Between, which we have been harassed and harangued and abused and just like cajoled by people saying we must watch it. And finally we are going to watch, we're going to review Mr. In Between, and we're going to do that on Pilot Plus this week, in addition to our spoiler for the first half of the season finale of Doctor Who. So that's exciting. But enough about that. What's our pick of the week?
Definitely for me, it's We Were the Lucky Ones.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I'd like to stand for Beacon 23, but I'm not sure I could do it with a straight face. So I liked Beacon 23, but no, it is not my pick of the week. It would indeed be We Were the Lucky Ones on Disney Plus. Well, I guess that is it for this week's show. We are done. We are finished. If you enjoyed it, please do head on over to Apple Podcasts and leave us something which gels with your particular sensibilities, whether that be 5 stars or 1 stars. Who am I to say?
5 rocks.
5 rocks, yes, a 5 rock rating, a 5 geological alien rock rating. There you go, thank you, Guy. It's a team effort. And please do follow us on the social medias at James C. Dyer, at K. Ribeiro, at Boyd Hilton, and at Pilot TV Pod. I say that literally every single episode. Do any of you increase our follower numbers? Do you fuck? But nevertheless, I'm going to carry on doing it.
And also, actually, I have to say, we have slowed down on the review. So if anyone likes James and you want him to get Kate, then please do write in.
Well, someone wrote in to say the cake is a lie, and I think they're true. I think that's right. I think it's true. I don't think we're ever going to see cake.
Listen,
we need 150 more reviews to get cake. I would like cake. So please send in your 5-star reviews. I would appreciate it. And next week we're going to be doing, frankly, everything that's out on next Thursday. So you can look forward to that. What have we got on next week's show? I think if I had to guess, we're going to be doing Douglas is Cancelled, which is in fact not cancelled, but comes instead to ITV1. We're going to be in Land of Women, which is on Apple TV Plus. And with any luck, we are going to be reviewing the third series of The Bear, which does come to Disney Plus if they make screeners available to us in time, and if Kay can be bothered to beam her review from Thailand. But you know what? Tune in next week and you will find out. Until such time, pilot out.